Making decisions using emotions is the exact opposite of what God wants us to do. I'm Dr. Fred, and you're listening to Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Well, thank you for joining me. This is Dr. Fred, and if you were listening last time, you'll know that we were talking about cultural Marxism and how it endeavors to produce a society that is free of traditional and specifically biblical values. And it does so by replacing those with something else entirely, something, as I mentioned last time, that is usually the polar opposite, and it is based on emotions, how people feel about something. We don't judge, or we come to learn to judge situations, not based on truth or falsehood, but whether or not our emotions tell us that it is truth or falsehood. Now, certainly, emotions can be used as indicators in situations, but emotions alone should not be the sole decision-making faculty. But those who resort to and rely on emotion to make decisions often become slaves to relativism. In other words, they don't have anything locked in solidly that they can refer back to as absolute truth. That whether they feel like it or not, or think that it's perfectly correct or not, they will go with it. They don't have that. What they have is emotional virtue. And that emotional virtue or relativism, it tends to generate a type of emotional tyranny. And usually people fail to see that. People's opinions are swayed not by truth or falsehood, but by how they feel or how someone else feels. Those who use political correctness do so in ways that appeal to the way a person feels about something. Have you ever been in a discussion with someone on a forum, on the internet, or some other place, or even in person? Often, things can get heated when two people disagree. If you've ever watched two political pundits on some television talk show, they will get into it. They'll talk over each other. They'll even call each other names. It gets really stupid. Why? Because they're going by emotional virtue. They haven't decided or agreed on what is absolute truth ahead of time. And so because of that, they see things from a different vantage point, and that vantage point is colored by the way they feel. It's done purposefully, because those wielding political correctness understand the true value of crafting an emotional pull in a person, and how this sentiment can override the higher faculties like thought, reason, and even logic itself. And I mentioned that before. When addressing the general public, contemporary advocates of political correctness, or what is also known as cultural Marxism, present their beliefs with appealing simplicity as merely a commitment to being sensitive to other people and embracing values such as tolerance and diversity. Diversity is a big one in politically correct circles. But the reality is different. Political correctness is the use of culture as a sharp weapon to enforce new norms and to stigmatize those who dissent from the new dispensation, to stigmatize those who insist on values that will impede the new PC or politically correct regime, free speech, and free and objective intellectual inquiry. Now, you know what's really interesting? Have you been hearing that some people in Congress are saying, we need to limit free speech? We can't just allow people to say what they want to say. That might offend somebody. Well, that's what free speech is about. Not deliberately, intentionally going around just for the purpose of offending someone, but if what I say happens to offend someone because it's truth and I'm basing truth on God's word, then that's their problem. I shouldn't be shut down because they have a problem with what I've said. So what's essentially at first presented as simply being sensitive to others ultimately ends up being a way to force people to speak or act in a certain way. This ends up restricting the First Amendment without even passing a law. It's a form of peer pressure. But it's important to understand two things about cultural Marxism. First, what it is, and second, where does it lead? Another way to ask that is to ask, what is the purpose of creating cultural Marxism in America, or allowing it to prosper, I guess, might be a better way to ask the question, and not just in America, but for any nation or society for that matter. What's the hoped-for conclusion? Well, as we dig deeper into determining what comprises cultural Marxism, we're going to realize that the answer to this question is obvious. Now, in order to better understand just exactly how America is being subdued, thwarted, and in the end, overtaken, all of it from within. Isn't that amazing? We need to understand more about what cultural Marxism is and how it has made its inroads into the fabric of American society. Most people, I'm sure, don't even recognize that what has been occurring within America, society, has a name at all. Now, a few episodes ago, I mentioned William S. Lind. And he's known for his understanding and teaching of what cultural Marxism is. He said this, let me rephrase it or repeat it here. Quote, cultural Marxism is a branch of Western Marxism, different from Marxism / Leninism of the old Soviet Union. It's commonly known as multiculturalism, or less formally, political correctness. From its beginning, the promoters of cultural Marxism have known they could be more effective if they concealed the Marxist nature of their work. Hence the use of the terms such as multiculturalism or politically correct or political correctness or being PC. It hides Marxism. Now, Lind also highlights the fact that while economic Marxism differs from that of cultural Marxism, the gap has been bridged by redefining Marxism so that it would fit the mold of American culture. In doing so, certain aspects of Marxism were and remain hidden from the general public. And again, we've mentioned before those low-information people. They don't really think that much. It's not that they're stupid. It's just that they don't care that much. They've gotten into the habit of not thinking, of just taking whatever is told to them as truth. They don't think, they're not into the position of critically analyzing things. They just simply accept. So those of us who taught, and I mentioned this before, public schools have long been aware of the term multiculturalism. In essence, multiculturalism, at its simplest point, basically acknowledges that a culture is comprised of numerous cultures. That by itself tends to remove anything suspicious from it. Who can't agree with the truth, right? Because it is truth. It acknowledges that a culture is comprised of numerous cultures. Nothing wrong with that. That becomes cultural diversity. And that's also something that we often hear about when discussing various components of a particular culture. The problem with multiculturalism or cultural diversity is that it too often focuses on specific aspects of one particular culture within the larger culture. Now, in such a situation, for instance, Islam is seen as deserving respect because of its differences, as well as, of course, its third world origins, and as such should be allowed to flourish when those of Islam become part of your existing culture. And in spite of the fact that many within Islam show no signs of wanting to adopt aspects of the new culture of which they have become a part. Now, that makes sense. If you've studied Islam at all, you know that for a person who is legitimately Islamic, who takes it seriously, they can't adopt aspects of another culture. They must actually force that culture to recognize Islam and to defer to Islam. So Multiculturalism allows for and even encourages the differences between culture. It focuses on the difference, actually. However, as we've seen throughout the world, the onus is not on Islam to assimilate, but the pressure, in our case here in America, is on America, or whatever culture they're in, to allow for Islamic excesses, in spite of the fact that these excesses fly in the face of the new culture in which Islamists have now taken up residence. This is encouraged in the name of diversity or coexistence. But at the same time, Christianity is being shoved to the side and restricted. It's, I believe, why Obama was, it's what he was getting at when he stated that, quote, the future must not belong to those who slander the prophet of Islam. And we all know when he said that, he spoke before the UN, and I believe that was in this past March, 2013. He essentially wound up elevating Islam above other cultures with that one statement, and insisted that people should be very wary of doing or saying things that might offend Muslims. No such warning was given about Christians or Christianity or Jews. He followed that statement up with this, but to be credible, those who condemn that slander must also condemn the hate we see and the images of Jesus Christ that are desecrated, or churches that are destroyed, or the Holocaust that is denied, unquote. Now, people hear that thing together, both comments, and they think, see, he was really being fair to everybody. No, he was still holding up Islam above everyone else. He did not say the future must not belong to those who slander Jesus Christ. He only said that with reference to the prophet of Islam, and he was referring specifically to Muhammad. Obama's first comment singling out Islam has far greater weight in that context than his follow-up comments about Jesus and the Holocaust. Multiculturalism succeeds where immigrant societies, while preserving their cultural habits and religious beliefs in the private sphere, make every effort to integrate into the public domain, to respect the laws of that new culture, assumptions and folkways of their host, and to contribute to the economic vitality of their adopted country. Clearly, this speaks of immigrants who come to America and who have come to America legally and do their best to become part of the fabric of America by learning the language, learning and obeying the laws of this land, and instead of relying on welfare, become active, productive members of society who work and pay taxes. This is when multiculturalism works. In that scenario, the immigrant is not expected to discard the culture to which they were born. They're simply expected to, in addition to continuing the practices of their native culture, take on the values and norms of their newly adopted culture. And the problem, of course, is that this rarely seems to happen anymore. And there is little place in America to encourage it. More often than not, multiculturalism seeks to publicly expose and focus on the differences between the races and ethnicities rather than focusing on the commonalities. This is why in 2013 we still have affirmative action, along with specific groups that cater to gender and race issues. It's politically correct to have them, though many believe them to be a form of racism in and of themselves. And those who complain against them are labeled racist, bigots, sexists, or all three. Well, that is our show for today. We are not done talking about political correctness. We're not done talking about multiculturalism. We're going to continue. And we've got a lot to say about it. And I hope you'll join me in future episodes. And we like to put them up Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And in the meantime, if you'd like to read some books that are free, go to my website, www.studygrowknow.com, and download some books. That's our show for today. Thanks so very much for joining me. And until we meet again, may God open your eyes to show you how blessed you are.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.